don't find out, buddy.
So, what are we doing now?
Guess we talk.
Hey there, and welcome back to The Watchlist. If this is your first time listening in, we're a podcast that talks about films that have been on our watchlist for some time. I'm Ollie, your host, and today I'm joined by Shay and Aaron. Today's film, The Sword of Doom. Made in Japan in 1966, The Sword of Doom is a story of a wandering samurai who exists in a maelstrom of violence. A gifted swordsman plying his craft during the turbulent final days of shogunate rule in Japan. Ryunosuke kills without remorse or mercy. It is a way of life that ultimately leads to madness. So I am with Shay and Aaron, and we literally just watched The Sword of Doom. To start off this episode, what are your guys' experience with Japanese cinema?
I've seen.
I got all the body pillows.
I'll read manga. I watch anime.
I'm pretty disappointed that Aaron stole what I was going to say, to be honest. My experience is anime, hentai, various other mediums with cartoons and big breasts. Although I was pleasantly surprised by this, where the lead had a very nice shaved chest.
Why are you being Sam Elliott all of a sudden with a gruff voice?
Because I'm playing with my chest there.
I get it.
What samurai films do you guys watch?
I've seen all the Kurosawa ones in the box set, apart from Sanjuro, which I've heard is a good one, but it takes me a while to get around to watching movies nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I like him a lot. I think this one actually might be my favorite samurai movie. It's Ooh. Pretty good.
That's a pretty bold claim.
I like the violence.
It's a really gory film, yeah.
I liked it when he chopped his fingers halfway off and it looked pretty gnarly.
Oh yeah, that was gnarly.
Some Evil Dead looking shit. It's pretty good.
Aaron, you're probably the Kurosawa. You're probably the Kurosawa expert around here.
Expert in that I've watched like Weeb. At least seven films.
Seven films. That's still a lot though.
Yeah.
Seven films in your life or seven Kurosawa films?
Seven films in my life. All of them Kurosawa films.
Nice.
Kurosawa is the only director that exists.
I'm not going to argue with that.
But I do think that Harakiri is the best samurai movie.
That's a very good one.
I haven't seen it.
It's really good. It's got
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, yes, yeah. Tatsuya Nakadai, the main actor, the main character in this film.
Okay.
He looks completely different than Harakiri, to be fair. Mm. And I think it's literally just like a couple years difference, and he somehow looks like a really old man in Harakiri and looks so young.
I mean, it's because he's made up, to be fair, to look older.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
What are your brief thoughts about Sword of Doom? I know, Shay, you literally just said it's one of your favorites samurai films.
Well, I like that it focused on the antagonist, and there wasn't really a good guy in it. There was. Everyone else, apart from this piece of shit, was supposedly good, and there was obviously people wanting their revenge and stuff. But I thought it was more interesting watching a film where I didn't want the protagonist to kind of win or survive. I was kind of, but it was entertaining watching him be a piece of shit. I think it's quite rare finding something like that, especially in the films I watch, at least, because it's always just good guy good, or good guy sometimes good. It's never outwardly focusing on the biggest piece of shit alive.
But what if good guy bad? Sort of Doom answers this question.
But he's not good.
But he's the good guy, but he's bad.
What if bad guy good?
そこに果たし状の早飛脚をやれ。芝居いくらの机の長屋へな。して勝負の期日は。明十六日。場所は芝増上寺大門右手の松林。時は人通りを避けて夜明けの宇野国。
So if it was told from the perspective of the brother character who wanted to avenge his brother at the very beginning, it's a very kind of like standard kind of like story of revenge.
It would be significantly less interesting.
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
It would just be the same as every other kind of samurai film that I've seen, at least, where someone's out for revenge. And whether or not the favorite character is the protagonist or not, it's kind of like an older badass or something, like Hidden Fortress. I would say the main character or characters are the peasant guys, but you don't really care about them as kind of just experiencing that through their eyes.
Yeah.
Mifune's obviously everyone's favorite character, and he's kind of got his own reasons for what he's doing, and he's just in their story, same as the princess. But yeah, I think it was refreshing with this one.
It's really interesting just seeing like the downward kind of like spiral of his character. Just he's just more of a piece of shit when as this film goes along, and he's so evil of it. Yeah,
pretty hard to do considering he killed a grandpa right at the beginning. It also seemed like the more he killed, the crazier he got, which kind of goes in like in tow with the whole thing that the sword is evil. And I think there's mythologies about swords that the more you kill, the more it like makes the wielder unstable and evil, and each act of cruelty that spills blood just deepens that insanity.
Yeah.
Which definitely happened.
Yeah, because there's the quote near the end that Mifume, I'm going to be really shit pronouncing.
Did you some kind of racist or something?
Shut up! he quotes by saying, was it evil mind, evil sword?
Evil yeah. soul.
Evil soul.
Evil sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like the one of the lead female characters in this film, just tying it back.
Well, no, every female character in this film was almost raped or stripped,
or at least
or beaten.
Director definitely has some kind of grudge.
Yeah
it was very uncomfortable at the start when the wife was being raped by the main character.
It's there to illustrate the first time it was there to like illustrate this guy's pretty fucking wretched. But I think as the film went on and it introduces more female characters.
Yeah.
And then there's got to be like at least like five guys that are like, I'm going to abuse you in some kind of form or fashion.
Yeah, because you have that bit near the end, I suppose, the uncle character who reveals that he's a thief and goes to the place where fake niece,
the flower teacher,
and just like kind of teaching her a lesson by kind of like stripping her clothes off, and just like,
is that what that is?
Well, he said he was gonna like, he was like, fuck you, I'm gonna strip you and tie you up and throw you.
No, this is much later on.
Yeah,
when
one of the many scenes.
Yeah, it's a bad sign when you lose count and you don't know which scene you're talking about.
I mean, to be fair though, it's like it's one of the only things about the film that it was like noticeable. That was something that was a bit like, okay, fifth scene in a row, I'm starting to get a bit tired of this, can we go back to the main character just like killing some folks? And then the snow scene came around and I was this film again.
I think I mainly had two weaknesses that being one of them that we just talked about. And I know the second part, when it gets a bit more kind of like political with the gangs, was a bit difficult to follow, I thought.
Yeah, there was a surprising amount of side stories that either went nowhere or just kind of were just random scenes chucked in.
This film is actually based on the largest volume of books ever. There's like 41 volumes.
And it's one film based on this 41 volume.
Technically there's another film that came out like 6 years beforehand called Satan's Sword, which they did actually have three films.
Okay.
Going through the story, which no one has talked about, and it seems to be very, very obscure. It doesn't have the best reviews from what I saw on Letterboxd anyway.
Letterboxd is just where I get all my information about movies.
Exactly. Mine too. I think those books talk a lot about the era, because they kind of briefly go through it in the film, that it's all based around the Shogunate rule.
Yeah.
It wasn't very clear from the film, but I read that the film's kind of around like the last couple of years of it, and I think that was going to be the focus of the later films. Mm. But yeah. Yeah, so there wasn't any other films after this. There was supposed to be a trilogy.
Is there any particular reason?
Because it was so violent.
Really?
Oh, really?
That's like the best part of the film. That's why I'm like, that's my favorite samurai movie ever, because it doesn't shy away from, when it wants to at least, it doesn't shy away from the violence. Like, the guy got fucking slashed in the face at the end.
His like eyes or something.
Like, it's not, it's bloody, but I didn't think it was excessively violent, but it's like, what? I mean, 70 years later.
When it came out at the time as well.
Because when you think of like other samurai films that you watch, especially Kurosawa films, they're, you know, quite tame.
Yeah,
there's like maybe a bit violent, but
maybe a spot friendly. Of blood. But this one has like dismemberment and various other injuries related to the blade.
A lot of hands.
A lot of hands get chopped off. Yeah.
A lot of Skywalkers in this film.
Exactly. Yeah. We should also talk about Toshiro Mifune, the legend.
He wasn't in it enough. But he had the best scene in the whole film. Yeah.
But I really wish they had like had like a square up at the end.
Yeah. Like, I would have liked. I mean, again, there's probably one where it's like, maybe in the sequel, the hero doesn't win, and that's when Mifune is going to be like, all right, I have to fuck this guy up, I'm the only one that can stop him, and that's when it kind of becomes a more traditional samurai film where it's a very clear hero and villain, and they are going to fight at the end, and it's not just a violent montage at the end and then a very abrupt credit scene.
Yeah.
I was very, very confused.
Yeah.
You accept pause and I was
it
like,
just kind of like freeze framed, and I was like, oh, what's going to happen? It was like, boom, and I was like, what?
I forgot to mention it. So I've seen this before, once before, and you guys, this is your first time literally just watching it.
Yeah.
I was definitely really confused by that ending. It's just like, you were really into it. I was like, really kind of like, violence on screen, this is brilliant, it's so bloody. I mean, it just kind of ends with a like freeze frame, like the end. I was like,
it kind of had a Ghost in the Shell type feeling for me, where I was loving the film, and then it kind of, just as it starts to get really interesting, it ends, and I was like, this kind of a shame, that felt significantly shorter than it actually was.
Definitely. I mean, feels like an unfinished project.
Yeah, because you got the story of the brother Hayama, or something along the lines of that.
I'm just gonna try not to.
Yeah.
Other than
I've got to write it down. Yeah.
Like, I can pronounce Toshiro Tushi. No, I can't.
Never mind.
I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut. I'm gonna go whenever you say something, and not do anything else. I'm a C-tier with weeb at best. Can't even pronounce anything. Can't even say, I don't know, samurai sword.
Katanda?
Banana?
Because they kind of set it up. shut up. More the mid part of it. Humar, the brother of the character who was killed near the beginning, killed by the main character, he's kind of like set him his path of like avenging. I mean, it's just kind of, yeah. They kind of like leave it off. It's like, oh, we'll just wait outside having their drink. And then that was it.
Well, yeah, because they see all this shit happening. Mm. And it's literally 7 minutes of the dude going around chopping people up. And the whole time I was thinking, where's the guy that was here literally to kill him? Who knows he's there?
Literally like had 20 scenes of him preparing for the duel.
Yeah.
It's like, and he keeps going back to his master. He's like, you're not ready yet. It's like, okay, I've got to train some more. And then the ending rolls around and he just never shows up.
Yeah.
Well, no, they said, I think it's the thief character that says, oh, we'll wait outside. We'll wait until they come outside. And then we'll attack. And then that was it.
Yeah, it was a big problem, I think, it didn't end the film in a way, because it wasn't satisfying, at least, because there were so many open plot holes that were obviously meant to be finished, but I don't know, it just seemed like such a weird point to end it when there's so obviously going to be this interaction with the two people that no one of them is going to die that night and not do it. And even if they were going to do it in the opening of the next film, it's still a bit weird to end it here.
I think, yeah, it was a very abrupt ending, but in terms of, I thought that the character of, oh, I'm going to mess this up now, Ryunosuke, I think that's how you pronounce it, the main character, I think it's kind of a... I think it was a good ending for him, as in that's where his kind of, like, fate lies.
I think it would have been good if he actually died there, and it was just...
Yeah.
This other guy didn't manage to get his revenge,
because
he was almost too cowardly, because he was like, oh, I'm just going to wait outside. I don't know that he couldn't have exactly gone in there and solved it, but it would have been good that neither of them got the ending they really wanted, because... Yeah. They both very clearly wanted to kill each other or be killed by one or the other, and neither of them got that, and I think it would have been interesting.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of, like, controversy by, like, how violent it was, but, it can be fucked to do a second one, unfortunately. I would.
Is there any reason why? Oh, I already asked, too violent.
Yeah, I was like, damn it.
They could have toned it down. They did that for Ninja Turtles too. they weren't even allowed to use their weapons in the second one because a bunch of mums complained.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The bit before you had, loads of people coming in to kill the guy near the end, that kind of, like, ghost sequence, really, really liked.
It was really well done. I really liked seeing the silhouettes and kind of the endless tunnel of the screens, and it's just chopping through them.
It reminded me a little bit of the black hair story from Quiet Down.
Yes. I was thinking that. Like, it was crazy. Very well done.
Like
the
house is, like, closing in on him. Realizing that the house is actually all, like, fallen apart and run down and stuff.
Mm.
So I think that would have been a good point for that to happen. It's gone, like, crazy like that, and then the brother character kind of comes in, they have their duel then, and he's kind of going to say, as much as I liked the kind of massacre scene, I think I would have preferred a more satisfying ending.
I think maybe if they had known, they wouldn't get their trilogy.
Yeah.
They'd have had, like, a different ending in the movie.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah. Speaking of that ending, did you guys notice, when his wife character,
the woman he raped and kidnapped, pretty much,
she says, kind of accuses him, oh, do you want to take over the world, don't you, with your hatred crimes, and pretty much, like, he's always going up against the world by how many people he has to fight off near the end.
Oh, dear.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Samurai Edition.
But yeah, it was ridiculous how many people were just like coming into the room. They were just pretty much like spawned whenever someone dies. Just like someone new comes into the room.
I would say, as cool as it was, it did get quite boring for me personally. Because it was just so much the same. And sure, he was progressing more and more into insanity, but it was just a lot of him swinging around, laughing, chopping people up, and then more people coming. And I was like, okay, can we finish the film now? Because this many people is somewhat unnecessary.
Which, to be fair, did I miss something, or was there a reason that like loads of people came in and started attacking him, or is he just going crazy? And
well, I think their group was turning on each other or something like that.
I thought it was only meant to be that five that killed the other leader. I assumed it was just because it was kind of going a bit nuts seeing ghosts and I'm like, what the fuck's happening? And then he started attacking them. They were just ready for that. Which evidently they weren't, because everyone fucking died.
I thought the supernatural elements were really cool. But I did think there was going to be more of that when I heard the name Sword of Doom. Like, just the title. I guess that's just, for some reason, Sword of Doom make me feel like the sword's going to play more of a role in the film. And it's hinted at a lot.
I wish there was kind of more of that. But it was just, it almost kind of comes out of nowhere. Where it's just like, the lady kind of screams, thinking, seeing like a ghost of someone there. Yeah, then there's this whole sequence going on.
It would have been quite cool if throughout the whole film, at least with his segments, it would be cool if you saw more of the ghosts of the people he killed, he didn't necessarily have guilt. He was just haunted by his actions,
like in the background or something.
Yeah,
almost Hill House style.
Yeah,
with each character that he murders with his own hands, their silhouette like appears him or something.
They hint it so subtly. You know the bit where the woman almost tries to kind of like stab him in the home in his sleep.
Yeah, so like right at the end before
you see him kind of like shaking in his sleep and just murmuring. I kind of think that's related to that, maybe.
I assumed it was him, because obviously the night before or whatever, he saw Mifune kill all his buddies.
Oh yeah,
I thought he was just
freaked out.
Freaked out and scared, and actually worried he wouldn't be able to beat this guy that challenged him. But
which totally wouldn't have.
Yeah, what I'm confused about is, I thought he told the guy at the watermill to tell the hero character that he would duel him whenever. So why was he actively seeking him when he sent that letter to say he's ready to duel? Like, why was it? It seemed like that was... maybe I missed something, or maybe I wasn't paying attention, but it seemed like they were both ready and willing, yet the story said otherwise.
Yeah, deleted kind of... scenes, maybe? Release the Snyder Cut?
No. You had the death of the woman, and then after that there's a title card, that there's a day jump after that, I think. And do we think he murdered his child?
Well, because you heard the cries of the kid when he was chopping all the shit. I assume either he actively killed the child or he left it.
I mean, he's definitely killed it in some fashion, in a sense that I think my takeaway was that he's just dipped, and he's killed the wife, and he's just kind of abandoned ship and left the child.
Because
you get the big loud like baby scream musical
and then that's when the chapter 3 card pops up whatever it was. It's kind of another weird thing that they left out at the end. It would have been like, I think it would have been cooler if the guy did show up at his house, and like the hero character showed up, saw the kid on his own, and realized that the duel was off because he dipped and ran away, and that's why he's hunting him. Like, it felt like a scene was missing from that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't... There isn't a lot of trivia about this film, so I really don't know if anything was, like, really cut out or anything like that, but... Yeah, it would have been nice to kind of have some extra scenes kind of filling out those kind of, like, plot holes almost, yeah.
I realize I say this is my favorite samurai film. I meant that as in violence wise.
No, yeah.
It was pretty damn good.
I really enjoyed the action.
The action was really well done in this. Yeah. And the choreography was insane. It's like you don't even see stuff like this in modern cinema.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it was definitely, like, all the fight scenes were really fun to watch.
Mm. I like the kind of beginning after the duel. You have that kind of, like, ambush of people coming to kill him. And he's just, like, kind of walking kind of, like, normally through these guys, but also kind of, like, slashing them up if they kind of make a move. And, like, the camera just kind of, like, kind of walks along with him, which is really neat. I really like that.
I actually really like the duel itself as well.
It was good.
The wooden swords.
Mm.
I like that it's just completely silent as they're, like, kind of squaring each other up. And it's kind of, like... whoever makes the first move, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was another moment like that. Well, I suppose it was the first and only duel.
What?
Just staring at me.
You kind of had that kind of moment, long, slow moment of tension when at the dojo between the brother and Ryunosuke.
Oh yeah,
he did it. He's making me laugh. Wasn't me, Mom.
Did I miss something? At that moment, we thought Mifune was killed because it was like chucking it down the rain, and we couldn't actually see what was happening.
I don't think it was him.
No, it was. It clearly wasn't him because it's in the film later. But what was that scene, and who was involved? Because
I think it's just another. I thought it was just another leader of
a school
or something.
I don't know. It just seemed like it was the antagonist that killed the guy.
Because if it wasn't Mifune, who was it, and why was that scene?
I thought it was Mifune because he said you are good at this technique.
Mifune said
he wasn't good at, and I assumed, oh, she's just killed him.
Which would have been very disappointing.
Yeah.
Because
but like,
you can't kill Mifune off like that.
Like, I don't even know what that fucking scene was because of that. Like, where did that come in? Maybe I just wasn't paying attention
but faked his death. And that's why they're all surprised when he comes out of the little, like, box thing. I don't know what it's called. They're carrying a box. And then Mifune, like, just jumps out in the snowy bit and proceeds to mess him up.
That would make sense. I mean, I kind of think they did that. I think they're part of the gang. They did it as a kind of, like, try to go up the ranks. Because I think you kind of have that the progress between, well, two of these characters, Ryunosuke and the kind of guy that kind of, like, seeks him out after that first duel.
Yeah.
I
like that we don't know his name.
No.
The good guy.
Yeah. You kind of have, like, this journey of, like, rising through the ranks of this, I'm guessing they're a gang or some kind of, like, house. I'm not 100% sure, but they kind of, like, they act like a kind of mafia almost.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like a traveling band of Ronin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like mercenaries, right? I imagine that's
I imagine so. Because, I don't know if they're setting them... Why is it a bit unclear if they're setting up their own kind of, like, hits in order to kind of, like...
Well, because the two leaders that you find out are, like, kind of rivals at the end of the film are there at the beginning for the first duel.
Mm.
And they're kind of like, oh, you know a lot. I like, that's cool that you can notice that you've got a keen eye. Do you want to join my gang? And we are going to go to Kyoto and stuff like that.
I like your sandals. Where you get them from?
Yeah.
I like your kimono.
I like your kimono. Kimono.
Is it Gucci?
Oh. Don't.
I think this is, I'm going to say this, I think this is the most beautiful black and white film I've seen.
Just period, ever.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's one of them. Like the snow scene in particular, I think that's just like,
that was really
so gorgeous.
I think it had definitely some of the more interesting cinematography as well. The set design was great, costumes were great,
the lighting was great as well. Yeah,
yeah, there was very, it was, the lighting was really good actually. Like when he's practicing the Itsuki technique or whatever it's called, where he's stabbing and you just, it's that ray of sunlight coming in through the window, just the dust and the sword piercing the dust. Yeah, that was good. Really nice.
So good. I really like the bit where you had that transition when he's just started fighting everyone at the very end, and he's in this space and he had this small kind of like spotlight on
him. That was really cool.
And he's just kind of like, fighting his demons but also fighting physical beings, which I really, really liked as well.
I think it's my second or third favorite samurai movie.
Ooh.
I think Harakiri is my number one. Mm-hmm. I like that film very, very much.
Yeah.
And I think I might need to rewatch Throne of Blood to see if it's going to be dethroned.
I think this wasn't as good as Throne of Blood to me.
Throne of Blood is so good. Like, talking of like Yojimbo cinematography as well.
Yeah, I really liked Yojimbo as well.
Yeah,
Yojimbo is my favorite samurai film. I think I'd put it like third in my list.
Yeah, it's a shame because there are parts of it that I really, really like, and I think it does better than most other samurai films.
Yeah,
but just the fact that it ended on a pretty empty story in the end was a shame.
Yeah,
I think the first time I watched this, I was like so kind of like entertained, but also kind of wanting to know more about the main character and his kind of like story of being evil, pretty much.
Because it kind of just shows you that he's bad and he just keeps doing worse and worse things. You're like,
Well, it's also just like his performance as well. The actor playing him, Tetsuya Nakadai, I think he does a really good job. I don't think he ever blinks in the film. He just kind of like stares at you with the camera.
That must be the pizza man.
It's the man himself.
Oh no, it's the pizza goblin.
Oh my god. Do you guys want to know some trivia for this movie?
Yeah, okay.
No.
Get out of my house. How'd you get here?
I don't know. So, a lot of the katanas were actually real weapons used on set.
Really?
Yeah, especially the bit where that ghost sequence going on, he's going through all of the kind of like the mats and everything.
He's actually chopping it up.
And there's there's a brief shot of him kind of using the sword as kind of like a kind of walking stick almost.
Yeah.
And the cinematographer had to remind Nakadai to not cut his toes up. They're real weapons.
Yeah.
Sounds like a health and safety nightmare to me, especially with recent events.
Yeah,
with having certain prop weapons on set.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't imagine if they were real when they were actually fighting each other
with the real swords.
With real swords.
That sounds like it could be
every actor that died in the film actually died.
That's why it was so violent, you guys.
It's why they didn't do a second one, because the director went to jail because he's a mass murderer.
Complete different director, you know, Jim Jarmusch, who did Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yes. Yeah.
No,
I still haven't seen it.
Well, you know about that film.
And the vampire
and
one.
The Dead Don't Die with Adam Driver and Bill Murray. And
oh, yeah, that one. Yeah.
I haven't seen that either.
No. It doesn't really matter. It's weird.
It doesn't matter.
I just want to say his name. Jim
Jarmusch. Spider-Man? Well, it's just not relevant, but I just want to know if you see Spider-Man.
Well, no, it's just like the weirdest kind of piece of trivia I got from IMDb that Jim Jarmusch said
this film helped him to stop smoking. I watched it every day until he stopped.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Understand.
There's not even like...
There was smoking in it. Well, there's like two bit. Well, what the uncle character has this kind of like pipe thing.
Yeah, but there's no, like, is it kind of a, I'm going to do that to make it hard for myself so if I can not smoke while watching this film that makes me want to smoke, I won't anymore. Or is it,
I don't just, know.
It's kind of a random fact.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I just found this out from IMDb.
Old Toby, the finest weed in the South Farthing.
A lot of the actors as well have been in other big Japanese projects as well. I mean, we know that...
I'm pretty sure at the time, Tatsuya Nakadai and Toshio Mifune were like the only two like actors producers knew of.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're just all of them.
I'm pretty sure the guy, the mill guy, wasn't he the... Is it the pig out of the three brothers in Yojimbo? Because there was the pig, the wolf, and the other one.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, because I thought I recognized him, and I don't know what else, like his voice and the kind of character where he's kind of the bumbling idiot. Seemed quite familiar, but I don't know if that's just me.
Yeah. I didn't realize until looking up on IMDb that Nakadai, who was also in Yojimbo.
Yeah, he was the wolf.
Yeah.
With the pistol.
He's also in Sanjuro as well.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
But a different character,
he's
right?
He's a different character. Yeah.
Completely different character. It's just the same actor.
Yeah.
Again, I guess the producers were just like, we can't figure out another like big actor.
Well, he looks completely different. He's got like a more traditional haircut.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bald cap and the
bald cap
top knot or whatever.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that. You know, remember the guy who kind of like hires Ryunosuke in this kind of like crime syndicate kind of thing. We kind of who's the leader of this gang?
Yes.
Yes.
He's in Harakiri as well.
Oh really?
Yeah, he's the kind of like the main guy that he speaks to.
What, telling him the story?
Telling him
without
the story.
Spoiling it for Shay,
exactly.
I guess.
Yeah. Before we finish off this episode, what was the most recent thing you guys watched? I already noticed, but I really want to talk about this with you.
Done it.
They're picking my family off one by one.
Let's fight like demons.
What do you think of Dune?
Good. I mean, it was really enjoyed. Like, it's kind of everything good about it. Everyone's already said, so there's no point in saying that. But yeah. I was saying to Aaron last night that despite everything great about it, like it is a really good film, and I am keen to see the next one. It was just, I don't think I'm gonna remember it. Like, it's kind of one of those films. Like, I don't want to see it again. I don't need to. I'd much rather watch a worse film again. Because I didn't, like... I don't know, there's just something about it where it didn't... I'm not the biggest sci-fi fan. I also don't like Timothée Chalamet or Zendaya or, like, other members of the cast. But they did good, like, most of them. But yeah, I know it just didn't really blow my mind that it has done for a lot of people, and it's just kind of more sci-fi stuff. I really enjoyed the political stuff in it. I think that's what I found more interesting, and then it kind of became a big, even though it was cool, like just a big action-y sci-fi thing. And yeah, there was just nothing that really particularly stood out to me that I came out on the screen being like, holy shit. Apart from Hans Zimmer's score, which was his best in years.
Yeah.
But apart from, like, even the visuals didn't blow my mind that much. Like, the sandworms just looked like penises. And
with teeth.
Like, I don't know what it is with Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve.
That's the one. He always has kind of like a layer over his shots with CG. So it's kind of like distorted in certain ways and kind of looks... Like, I don't know how to describe it, but the same thing happened in Enemy with certain CGI shots, and it's just kind of like almost a it's like cling film over it. It kind of distorts it ever so slightly. It makes it look more fake to me than it does. And it's, I don't know, man. It's, the visuals didn't seem that impressive to me. Like, of course they are, because it's big budget Hollywood film with probably the like superstar studded, just like probably one of the more expensive films in recent memory to make, I imagine. But I know I was more impressed by some of the visuals in films like The Green Knight that came out this year. Like, it just, that blew my mind more than this did.
Okay. Aaron, what did you think of Dune?
Well, the same thoughts. I think it's more my kind of sci-fi than like big glowy holographic images and like, I mean, there are laser beams, but like laser rifles and things like that that you would see in like, I don't know, Star Wars something.
When you say big glowy images, do you mean kind of Blade Runner-esque or kind of?
I mean more like, you know, like Prometheus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where every like spaceship has to have like a map in the middle of the like room, and yeah, there's all these like floaty like glowing planets about, and I don't know, and like it just, the sci-fi technology felt more like you could actually grab it and like,
yeah,
clunky and
old. Somewhat more like you could believe this being,
yeah,
even though it's set way in the future, more yeah, so than most sci-fi films are, it was definitely more like, okay, I could see this being an evolution in humanity and yeah, kind of,
although they all use like swords and stuff still,
yeah,
which to be honest I liked a lot,
yeah,
because it was kind of cool, tying it more to the kind of fantasy I'm more into, which is like high fantasy and like Lord of the Rings and shit like that.
Yeah,
it was almost like, almost kind of like a Lord of the Rings in space, where it's like this kind of sprawling epic, but like instead of like going to kind of like different countries like Rohan or like Mordor or whatever, it's different planets and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. Yeah, no, I seen it a couple of times now. Loved it. Really, really loved it. I think it's the most kind of, to me, it's the most immersive film I think I've seen in a while. In terms of, you really want to kind of know more about this world, and it's the world building, and I think it's really good.
Yeah.
And I mean, they kind of briefly, because there's so many characters in this film, they kind of briefly show you kind of the progress of some characters, but yeah, there's not much of a kind of progression in the story, but I think, yeah, it's just the kind of sci-fi and kind of like fantasy, yeah, that I love, the kind of like scale back. And I think I saw like an interview of Denis Villeneuve saying this, that he didn't want any kind of the use of like computers,
yeah,
or kind of AI, which I think was a really, really wise idea. But yeah, yeah. When part two comes out, we need to watch it in IMAX.
Oh, definitely. To be fair.
Yeah, like, I kind of regret not doing that. I think maybe that's why. Because as well, I've noticed that the screen we saw in it, all the dark scenes were so dark. It's kind of like
that
when
last,
you're in a
sandworm section.
I couldn't see the top half
which
of it.
Which I enjoyed still. I thought it was a really good scene.
Yeah.
But when the sandworm comes out, it's just this big kind of like sort of vague blob.
Yeah,
in front of them, and it's kind of like I can sort of see there's like teeth and stuff, and
like some, and it was like in detail showing its like throat open and close or whatever. I don't know what the fuck it's doing, but I couldn't see it because it was like being sat at an awkward angle with like an old TV where it just kind of go green if you kind of looked up or something like that, and it wasn't, the contrasting was just really bad on the screen, and the sound mix was quite bad as well. So I'd like to go somewhere where it's kind of designed itself to be the ultimate cinematic experience to see something like this. Otherwise, it is just kind of another, whoa, look at what we can do type film.
So I watched in IMAX, and I think it is mostly the same in terms of the lighting and all of that on the IMAX, but all of the kind of like desert sequences were filmed like exclusively for IMAX, so you get more of the image on the screen.
More sand?
More sand.
Whoa.
More spice.
Anakin's favorite film.
Yeah. Oh, another thing I want to talk about before we get off topic with this. Mm. I thought the whole the voice thing,
I loved it.
It was very cool, and I wanted to see more of it.
Mm.
But it kind of, I wish it kind of leaned more into the, oh, there's this almost coven of witches and was very, very classic fantasy.
I was going to be a series of it, apparently.
Of what?
The Bene Gesserit.
Okay, that would be cool.
Sisterhood.
Well, I kind of, yeah. I think maybe this would have worked better as a miniseries or something, to be honest.
It's been like, done like that before in past adaptations.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But I know there was just I knew it was important because they told me it was important, but it didn't really get explored that much. I don't know if it is going to get explored more in this like part two.
I think it will be. It's going to go more religious from what I kind of remember from bits of the book, but also the David Lynch film.
It just it seems like there's so much they have left to do in one more film.
Yeah.
Seems a bit like...
Is it only going to be one more film? It's just part one, two? Or?
So, there might be more, but I think part two is going to be just, you know, the second half of the first book.
Yeah.
They might do more. There are other Dune books out there. But
Do they all follow Paul and co? Or?
To be honest, I really don't know. Everyone talks about the first book, but no one has really ever talked about the other ones, really.
I mean, I think it's quite predictable where it's going to go. At least I have my theories.
I mean, the film kind of shows you.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, with its visions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Paul is the Messiah character that they say he is. I don't know what this to put, obviously.
Well, they kind of like hint that it's all with the Fremen being told that there's a kind of like a prophet out there.
Yeah.
It's all kind of like a lie to keep them under control, almost.
Yeah. I mean, if it is going to be there is a prophet, I still don't think Paul is said prophet. I think it's going to be the little brother character that's going to come into it, obviously, because it shows that his mum gives birth to a
sister.
Child. Oh, it's a sister.
It's a sister.
Wild.
Whoa. Mm. Okay, then I take back what I just said.
Paul's definitely going to be a Messiah.
No, I hope not, because he's boring as fuck.
Yeah.
Just because he's Timothy Chalamet.
Well, I don't know. Like, I've spoken to someone who loves the book series, and they've said that Paul is just quite a bad narrator in the story anyway.
Mm.
So maybe Timothy Chalamet is doing a great performance, but it's just so wooden. And I couldn't get behind. Yeah. He's either mumbling or screaming.
Mm.
And he has no facial expression.
I didn't mind it too much. I think
he's just not a leading character for me. He's always worked in, like, say, Lady Bird or something. He works in that. I got tired of him in that, but he was thankfully only in it for 20 minutes.
You're kind of supposed to get tired of him.
Yeah.
Because
the character,
like,
the
boring pretty boy who, like, the lead fancies and then finds out he's just a boring pretty boy.
Yeah. It's like, don't they have sex? And it's like three pump jump and he's done, and then she gets kicked out of the house.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I think, was it Rebecca Ferguson? I think she steals the film.
Yeah, I'm really glad that her character did get more, because I thought she was just going to be the, I'm going to stand behind Oscar Isaac, cry and snivel and walk away type character.
Yeah.
But then it switched up entirely in the second half of the film.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah, I think she's going to step back a bit, because as a character, she kind of like guides Paul a lot through the story. But I think in this one, I think Paul's got to, you know, rise up to being with a Duke, but also a Messiah figure for Fremen. But yeah, I'm really excited what they're going to do with part two.
A great man doesn't seek to lead. He's called to it. But if your answer is no, you'll still be the only thing I ever needed you to be. My son.
If anything, ever since No Time to Die came out, I got the James Bond collection of films, all of them. So
you've been watching all of them. You've been watching all of them.
I've been watching all of them, and it has been destroying me this past couple of weeks. Or just by how misogynistic and really aged it is. But it was interesting kind of like looking back at it. I'm still going through them right now.
It's like, he sure raped a lot of women, but damn, did he look good doing it.
Oh, yeah, damn Sean Connery. But no, I'm my most recent watch was GoldenEye last night. Pierce Brosnan's first film, which yeah, it's okay.
It's, who is your favorite Bond so far?
Huh?
Who's your favorite Bond so far, excluding Daniel Craig, if he would have been your favorite?
So up to this point, with Pierce Brosnan, yeah, I'm not gonna count Daniel Craig because I haven't got to him yet.
Timothy Dalton.
Huh?
Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
Well, really?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Isn't he like everyone's least favorite?
Didn't he have one film?
No, he had two.
Two? Yeah.
Two whole films.
Two whole movies for Timmy Dalton.
He's such a good Bond in terms of he interprets Bond more as just a cold-blooded killer, whereas everyone else is just trying to be, you know, charming, you know, the hero of a story who gets the girl at the end of the day. This one, he's just like, he's a dangerous person that kind of manipulates his way and doesn't, you know, you got Sean Connery and Roger Moore, who are kind of like, when they're in danger, they always look, always distracted by women. He actually focuses on the mission in hand, what's actually at stake, than sleeping with just some random person.
But I love you, James Bond. Shut up, baby, I know.
Oh, God. But yeah, no, it's been an interesting game for the franchise and how much it's kind of like trying to copy like really popular films at the time, especially in the 70s.
How so?
They were really inspired by samurai movies and that and that one.
That one James Bond movie.
Well, you got like,
oh God, oh shit, I forgot about that. Oh dear.
Oh dear. Which one was that? Was that Sean Connery?
That was Sean Connery. That was you and
Of course twice. It was. Of course it was Sean Connery.
Well, it doesn't make any sense because in the film it's like, oh, your identity's been sorted out. We must disguise you. You'll be undercover and you'll have this wife and we'll make you Japanese. And they go through this like surgery sequence where they actually try to make him Japanese, but he's just got like a really awful haircut.
Oh my God.
And just, don't like, they give him like stereotypical like squinted eyes and
yeah,
kind of
the,
buck
yeah.
teeth, and first thing he does is call his wife a cunt and slaps her in the face.
No.
And then
no. Well, yeah.
No, that was Sean Connery behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's just Sean Connery in general.
Yeah.
Well, it's really funny because they
what
do
a bad
that.
Man. What bad, bad man.
They bad do man that, but is like there's still kind of assassins trying to kill him anyway, but they still go along with this kind of like undercover story. Like,
did
yeah.
they just cover him up and he looked exactly like another wanted man but a Japanese man?
Exactly. Yeah. And whenever he speaks like a word of Japanese, it's like the most Scottish thing ever. He's really not undercover at all.
Yeah,
I think it just looks really unnatural, but yeah.
I think that Scottish man looks really unnatural dressed up as a Japanese man.
I think it's an unpopular opinion, but I think it was really unnatural when they made Sean Connery look Japanese.
Why not just in general? Just like Sean Connery is just an unnatural man.
Yeah, gremlin.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I'm going through the Pierce Brosnan films at the moment, so yeah, they're okay.
My favorite one is GoldenEye 64, specifically the video game.
I never played the game. I played like the DS game, which was okay, but not the actual Nintendo 64 game.
Absolute masterpiece.
I haven't played it either. I haven't played it either.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, Shay and Aaron, for joining me.
You're
for talking
welcome.
About Sword of Dune, but also a massive conversation about Dune.
I feel like Dune. It was like more of a 50-50 type
it
situation.
Was, yeah.
I mean, at least it wasn't us ranting about Game of Thrones for an hour and a half, and you're like, can we just talk about Avengers?
Don't you even get me started on Game of Thrones since then, bro.
And I mean, it did take us about 10 minutes to stop making noises and actually start talking. But
got a lot of editing to do.
You do. I think half of this is going to be unusable.
I think 100% of it is very usable.
Anyway, thank you very much, Shay and Aaron.
You're welcome.
And I'll see you guys soon.
Well, you'll see us when we put the microphones down and we go back to reality.
But there is no reality outside of the podcast.
Oh my god.
Our souls are trapped forever in the voice recording.
In the sword of doom.
The more you record, the more you lose your soul to madness.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be updated on future news and episode releases, you can follow us on Instagram at watchlist_podcast. And let us know what films we should cover. I'm Ollie, and I'll see you in the next episode.